Hey, Zero Block 30 listeners, you can find us every Tuesday and Friday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Prime members can also listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
This episode of Zero Block 30 is brought to you by Dollar Shave Club. Chaps, you and I right now have been rocking the beards for quite some time, but guess what? There are other parts of the body that are going to need some shaving come summertime if you're a hairy beast like myself. So get you some Dollar Shave Club, because guess what? There's nothing more embarrassing than going to the convenience store and having to ring a bell to get help to get into the razors behind the protective plastic. It is really emasculating, like you're a little kid shopping with mom. So if you sign up for Dollar Shave Club, you're going to save money because these razors are incredibly affordable. And you're not dealing with all these gimmicky razors with like laser pointers and super duper grips and all this crazy other stuff with 17 blades that you don't need. So right now, we're giving away a one-month trial of the razors for $1 with free shipping. All you got to do is go to dollarshaveclub.com/chaps. That's dollarshaveclub.com/chaps. Get your body summer ready, shaved, ready to go today. Zero Blog 30. Let's do it. And he didn't tell you he was coming. He didn't tell you he was coming when
that's the
Austin's
that's
right
really,
up the road.
That's really fucking troubling that he didn't even give me the courtesy, as somebody that's on a podcast with him, and we've been pals for a while, to let me know that he was going to be like an hour and 15 minutes up the road. And then when I asked him, he was like, yeah, it's me and my buddies. No invite, no nothing. Just fuck you, chaps. It's not like, hey, maybe we could maybe meet me at the clubhouse just for a quick drink. It was none of that. I mean, I know that he knows that I'm going to be in New York in like 2 weeks anyway, so maybe he just doesn't care. But I'm going to give Riggs right now, you know how Part of My Take, who we have on in a little bit, we have Dan Katz, Big Cat from Part of My Take. They give their listeners a one-week suspension. I'm going to give Riggs a half a hug suspension. I'm not going to be fully in it whenever I hug him when I see him in New York. I'm going to give him a half-hearted hug.
I feel like that's fair, you know. In his defense was he didn't realize the geography of Texas, how close San Antonio was to Austin, which is surprising coming from a Harvard grad that he doesn't realize that it's a straight shot down I-35.
Pretty sure that as a Harvard guy, he's looked at a map before.
Yeah. So, and that was funny, because he's like, oh, yeah, I guess it is pretty close. I was expecting him to say, like, hey, maybe you can shoot up and have a beer with us one night or something, but we didn't get any of that. So I understand why you're troubled right now.
Anyways, fuck Riggs. I mean, we'll just get into stuff that he wouldn't want to talk about anyway.
Perfect.
Like, I know that whenever you were in, that you did some time, most of your time away from America was just in Iraq, right?
All of it was, just Iraq, yeah.
So our service was a little bit different because my first 4 years, I spent time in Japan. Mm-hmm. Like, so I went to boot camp, then MP school, then K-9 school, and then I went straight to Japan. And the first 3 years, I left there, I didn't even return to the States for anything.
Like, wow.
I stayed the entire time until I went to Iraq. Well, I might have came back on, like, a vacation, like, once for, like, 10 days or something. But not long. The majority of it was there. And we didn't have American television. Like, when you live in Okinawa, when you live in Iwakuni or wherever you're living in Japan, that's something that most Americans don't think about, is the fact that there's no English television, except for what's provided on base and occasionally outside of base, but it wasn't in Okinawa at the time. So all we had was, like, three channels of the Armed Forces Network. And if you lived out in town, you only had one channel, and it was just one single channel. So for me, as a Jaguars fan and a Braves fan and a Magic fan, I didn't get to see hardly any of my teams play forever.
Yeah.
I just didn't. And when I did, it was like 2 o'clock in the morning when the Sunday afternoon game was on. And whenever I talk to my pals about what happened with the Jaguars from like 2005 to 2008, I have no fucking idea who like any of the players were or anything like that.
Yeah, because I feel like back then too, like you couldn't really stream games. There wasn't any other way to watch them except on TV.
Because internet wasn't that fast.
Exactly.
I mean, you didn't have fast enough internet to stream anything. Like you had to just downloading a song took like 10 minutes. I mean, it was slow ass internet on base as well. And God forbid you got caught pirating shit on base, even if you could do it, like, you'd be fucked.
Absolutely. And it was crazy. I mean, you mentioned there was only three channels. So, I mean, we get so spoiled these days, you know, DirecTV, Fios, whatever you have. You got hundreds of channels, hundreds of options. And it's always crazy, too. Sometimes I'll be flipping the channels at night. It's just side note. And I'll be like, yo, there's nothing on. But that always blows me away that there's like 800 channels and I can not find one thing that I want to watch. But anyway,
so whenever you did Armed Forces Network, did you have any like memories of anything that you watched that was like a big event that you watched on AFN?
Yeah, a couple things when I was deployed. The Super Bowl when the Cardinals played the Steelers, whatever Super Bowl that was. I remember us, man, that was, yeah, like 2, 3 in the morning. We're all just sitting in one room together. So that was actually kind of fun because we had a couple beers and it was a nice time. I watched the Army-Navy game in 2008 in Iraq. And then, so the way I guess the Armed Forces Network chooses their programming is they just look at like the major channels, ABC, CBS, NBC, whatever. And they just take like the major primetime shows and throw those on AFN. Mm-hmm. So one thing that was very popular in 2008, 2009 when I was in Iraq was Dancing with the Stars. Mm-hmm. And compared to the other two channels, that was like the best we were going to get. But I think I might have mentioned on the show before how we turned that into a bet. So we would all be sitting around watching Armed Forces Network at night, watching Dancing with the Stars, and you would challenge someone, and you'd have to guess the scores that the person got. And so I would guess against you, Chaps, like, all right, he's going to get 2 9s and a 10. Well, if you didn't get 2 9s and a 10, you got to slap me. So we just did straight slap bets watching Dancing with the Stars, if you can believe that. So it was like,
no, I mean, I mean, like we talked about before, like the dumbest shit that you wouldn't think military dudes would like People Magazine, Time Magazine, not even Time, Us Weekly. Yeah. Like that's the kind of shit you like.
And it was hysterical
too. You want an escape, and Dancing with the Stars is perfect for that.
And then like
what's more different than combat operations than fucking watching Kristen Calaveri like do a twirly twirl.
Yeah, but then it was funny too because like we'd get a few weeks into it and like guys started getting technical and like getting to be experts. Like, oh yeah, I don't know, like she wasn't really pointing her toes on that lift. Yeah. That's definitely gonna be points.
Dude, that's just ugly as fuck that smells like straight up nutsack that's trying to tell somebody who's tiny as hell that just did like a triple pirouette like what she's doing.
Yeah, but so I mean, yeah, it was just one of those things that when you're deployed or when you're away from the States, as you were in Okinawa and some other places, you just kind of deal with it. I feel like it's one of those things where there's no sense in complaining about it every day because it's not going to change it. You just deal with it.
So my big moment whenever I watched AFN was when I woke up in the hospital after I got shot. I looked at the TV and there was a Red Sox game playing. It was Red Sox, Yankees, and I was just enthralled that, like, I was getting to watch a live baseball game.
Yeah.
I was like, this is live. Like, oh, my God. Like, I hadn't seen sports or anything live because where I was at, we didn't have AFN. So when I actually went back to the base, it was amazing. The reason why I brought up all this AFN shit, what year is it, Connor?
We are now in the year of our Lord, 2017.
We're in fucking 2017. And I'm setting this up because I bought in 2005 in Okinawa a large, like, 60-inch, high-definition TV that had, like, the big tube in the back. This week, AFN announced that they are finally going to have high-definition television. And it's not even getting rolled out until next summer.
So oh, gee, I didn't know that part.
They're giving themselves, like, another year to get it right. Give the troops fucking HD TV, man.
Seriously.
Like, come on. Keep your fucking lobster on Father's Day and give the boys high-definition TV.
That's ridiculous. Like, I don't even know. I guess it's just the HD cable, but knowing the military, we're just not going to pay for that HD cable for however long it's been now. So
I don't know what the reason could possibly be. If, like, the bandwidth, I don't know how any of that technical shit works.
Neither
Pete
do I.
Might, that's listening in, he might know, like, what they actually need to have high-definition TV. Do you know, Pete?
Yeah, Pete, can you help us out here?
My guess is that it's the satellite bandwidth, because it wouldn't be a cable, right? It would be broadcast from someplace and downlinked in these remote locations, and then maybe it travels over cable, but that doesn't matter. So it would be very likely the cost of satellite transmission. It's just flat out cheaper to transmit SD than HD.
Well, there you go. There's your answer.
Well, fuck. I mean, we spend trillions of dollars on other bullshit. Like, get them fucking.
Yo, can we spring for the HD?
Goddamn, dude. Like, skip off on one case of BMREs and give them fucking high-definition TV.
Exactly.
And that doesn't have anything to do with Japan. I mean, because, like, that might make sense if you're talking Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria. Like, that might make sense in a forward environment not to have high-definition TV.
Sure.
That's not really a priority. But in Japan,
yeah,
they got high-definition TV in Japan.
Especially when, especially when you consider, like, Japan, there's, like, such high-tech this is going to sound redundant, high-tech technology. That's where, you know, so many great things come from. So we can't get HD technology in Japan. It sounds a little ridiculous to me. So, but I'm really happy for the military that they're finally getting HD. Because they
nice
deserve
little caveat,
it.
Because when I moved to Japan, I sure as fuck thought that I was going to be able to have, like, the newest PlayStation when it came out. Because, you know, they come out in Japan before they come out here.
Mm-hmm.
But did you know the games aren't compatible?
No, I didn't know that.
The one that you buy in Japan, like if you buy a Nintendo in Japan or something like that, they don't work with American games.
Well, color me shocked. I did not know that.
I was standing outside this Japanese Toys R Us because there's Toys R Us fucking everywhere in Japan. And I was like, I want to get this. And the lady spoke English and she was like, this doesn't play American games. And I was like,
what are you saying, lady?
I was like, that is very problematic because she's like showing me, she's like, well, you can play baseball, but it's Japanese baseball, which in hindsight, I probably should have done it because it would have been badass now, like 10 years later, to have like if you came down to my house in Texas, we put like my projector on my wall, in my garage, and we play Japanese league baseball.
Yeah, that'd be pretty
wild. That would be pretty fucking dope with everybody cheering in Japanese and shit. Be very, very different.
That's fantastic.
Another thing that I wanted to talk about, the kind of caveat of what we said last week with Max, where Max was talking about how being a veteran can't be the only the only part of your life.
Yep.
This week there was an article that came out. So there's this guy who is from Scranton, Pennsylvania. I'm not going to say his name because his name doesn't even really matter. But what happened was this guy lied about being in combat. He told reporters, and they did this big hometown reporting on him, that he had gotten shot in the chest and that he had a role in killing a bunch of people in Iraq and Afghanistan, that he did all these crazy shit. And then in 2013... he was driving drunk and he killed one of his friends as a passenger, and he served about a year in jail. And the judge let him off because of partly because of his story of him being a veteran and having some issues with PTSD. And he had to do 1,000 hours of community service and just all kinds of stuff. He went to the veterans court, and now he was caught lying again about his service. And I feel like part of the reasons why guys do that is because we allow, for some reason, no other job in the world does that become your identity of what you did. And I feel like too often veterans allow that to assume their entire sense of self-worth is because you're a Marine or you're a soldier, or you're an airman, you're a seaman, whatever. Like, I don't feel like that's healthy. I feel like you can look at what you did in the past and embrace that and celebrate the fact that you did this at one point, but you've got to have eyes downfield on the mission.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You got to have your eyes, I think the expression is, you got to have your eyes through the windshield, not the rearview mirror, because when you think about it in the grand scheme, so you were in the Marines for about a decade, you know, between school and my service, nearly a decade as well. But then we're going to live on for another 50, 60, 70 years. So in the grand scheme, it's a very small fraction of our life. Now, I agree. Believe me, I am very proud of my service. It is something that I will hold dear to my heart for the rest of my life. But by no means do I feel like that needs to dictate the path I take. I shouldn't feel the need to always revert back to that or always refer to it as why I'm doing this or why I'm doing that and justifying actions. Well, okay, because I was in the Army and, you know, I have PTSD, so that's why I did X, Y, and Z. Well, no, like, it almost becomes like a crutch. Like, I don't want to do this or that because I was in the military, or I will be affected negatively by something because I was in the military. I just think it's a negative way to look at your service and use it in a way that is almost taking a little bit away from it if you're constantly relying on it in that facet. Do you agree?
I agree to an extent. Like, I feel like there's some things that you are a smart person if you avoid it because it gives you, like, say, for instance, PTSD. I don't go around fireworks because it bothers me. Like, it doesn't bother me that other people do it, and I don't tell other people not to. I just sit in my house and throw on some headphones because I know that it's going to make my heart race and I'm going to feel uncomfortable. Like, it's just part of what happens, like, after I got shot, like, being around things that sound like gunfire aren't incredibly comfortable for me. And I feel like that's okay. I feel like you struggle more if you're like, this bothers me, but I'm going to just push through it and push through it and push through it to the point of a breaking point. And you see those kind of stories happen all the time. So I feel like we have to get to a point where we're cognizant of what happened in the past, but also moving forward, because I used to like dread it so much, and now I don't. Like, it's 4th of July. I know it's 4th of July. I'm going to throw on some headphones, and I'm going to be good. I'm just going to sit in my house, hang out, and watch a movie.
Yeah, well, you made that conscious decision to not let it affect you anymore, and I think that's what you need to do.
And not necessarily not affect me. I'm not going to let it affect me adversely. I'm going to have mitigating factors of what I'm going to do.
Yep.
And the next guest that we have on Zero Block 30 named Kevin Lace. Kevin is he's a former Navy SEAL, and he starred as himself in American Sniper. And a lot of times when people talk about Chris Kyle from American Sniper, they bring up the fact that Chris, whether rightly or wrongly, had a reputation of embellishing a lot of the stories that happened. And I feel like Chris got caught up in that. Even with the reputation that was as strong as his and what he did in combat, which no one disputes, he still embellished it to a whole nother level. And it's hard to avoid, because you like to think of yourself as doing these great and wonderful things. And it's kind of like when you had your best haircut of your life, you know, like you have the best haircut of your life and you know it with the moment that you look in the mirror.
Mm-hmm.
3 months down the road, that best haircut of your life looked even better. You're like, man, if you guys could have seen this fucking haircut. Mm-hmm. And it just gets better and better and better.
Each time you tell the story,
you still have your same face. It was just a haircut. But eventually, even in your own mind, you can start to look like Brad Pitt, even though you don't.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's a lot of guys with combat experience think of themselves looking back on Brad Pitt, and they probably weren't Brad Pitt. They were probably just themselves with a pretty good haircut. They had a pretty good day.
Yeah.
And they did some pretty good shit.
Yeah, because I think, you know, you tell stories so many times, and just by the nature of storytelling, you know, things maybe get embellished, or maybe, you know, just you don't remember things as clearly as time goes on, and the story just kind of evolves and changes a little bit. And I think you need to be careful to not make it so wildly different that you go from, well, I was working a checkpoint, to, well, we performed a raid on Saddam Hussein's mansion and captured 50 insurgents, you know.
And it's not just military guys that do that too. There's no reason for The Rock to have to embellish anything in his life. The dude is fucking huge. He's an enormous guy. He's the richest person in Hollywood. He doesn't hit a golf ball 490 yards.
Yeah.
He just doesn't.
That was ridiculous.
But he probably does hit it a long fucking way. Mm-hmm. He probably hits it well over 350 because he's so huge if he really gets a hold of one. But there's a far difference between hitting it 350 and 370 to hitting it 490. Like, there's a huge difference, and I feel like we get involved in some embellishing. Now, somebody that I don't feel like that did that was Kevin Lace, who's coming on now, and that's going to be brought to you by the good folks at Barstool Sports. If you guys don't know, we have a line of shirts and a line of socks, hats coming, all kinds of different shit coming to the store. I love it when our listeners for Zero Block 30 post pictures of themselves wearing our gear. One, mm-hmm. because it helps us out, it gets the name out, and it looks fucking dope. I honest to God think that our shirts, our ZBT shirts, are the most aesthetically pleasing shirts in the store. Like, just the block letters, the mm-hmm. ZBT, they have different ones. Yep, there's the Marine version, Navy version, Air Force version, and Army version. You all look good. They're comfortable, lightweight. Go get them. And a portion of everything that's ZBT related goes to a veteran organization or charity.
I feel like we haven't mentioned that in a while, so I think it's worth mentioning it again for any new listeners. So
we have like the charitable arm of Barstool, which is pretty awesome. So go to barstoolsports.com, go to the store /ZBT, and get you some ZBT gear. If you tweet me or Connor, we'll retweet your shit from our handles and the ZBT one. So do that. Here's Kevin Lake.
All right, joining us right now, we have a very interesting guest. This gentleman is a veteran. He is an author. He wrote the book The Last Punisher. He is a Navy SEAL. Please welcome to Zero Blog 30, Special Operator First Class, Kevin Lace. Kevin, welcome to the show. How you doing, buddy?
Doing well, fellas. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, man. Thanks for coming on. I read your book, and it's got to be a surreal experience
to actually have an idea for a book and then put it in and then be like, fuck, people actually like my story. That's got to be kind of a strange, like, surreal looking at it. Like, where I, when I, if I looked at it like, do people want to hear my story? Sometimes I'm like, no, but people actually care about your story. That's got to feel kind of good and kind of strange at the same time, right?
Yeah, I think, you know, my high school English teacher probably feels the most strange, you know, the fact that I could string like three simple sentences together, let alone people read it. Yeah, you know, the book came about, it was an idea. You know, we wanted to go ahead and help tell a story, but really dive into the mindset. Because I felt like a lot of memoirs don't get into why men go to war and kill people, and then why are they able to come back and be fine. So that was the main concept. Adding the detail was the impressive part. You know, good thing we had Ethan Rocky on board to help with the writing. My wife really brought a lot to the table with, you know, the stuff that we commonly overlook, like feelings. Mm-hmm. You know, we would talk about some certain situations and she's like, well, how did you feel? And I never really thought about that. So she brought a lot to the table and helped, you know, adding a more robust, like, picture in your mind as to what's going on. And then also, if you're reading it in that first person, how I was feeling going through those situations.
Yeah, it was pretty – one of the parts that really stuck out to me at the very beginning of the book, where you kind of talk about the young Navy dude who asked you, are we going to get our combat action ribbon, like, for the first firefight that you were in. Like, I thought that part was so poignant because I remember those young Marines around me the first time they got into a firefight, and they'd be like, hey, are we going to get a combat action ribbon for this?
Yeah,
and
I'm
like,
that's where the head
well,
goes.
Well, that was combat action, dude. So
yeah, probably.
Yeah,
don't worry about that.
What's funny is that was, you know, I was very new to it myself, but, you know, you kind of have to play the part at times. But I, you know, the opening, I had a lot of fun writing the prologue, and I wrote a lot more of the book than I thought I would have, because when you're telling a personal story, you want to make sure that each detail, every word that goes into it is exactly how, you know, the people who were there will respect it and, you know, appreciate it. So I ended up writing quite a bit, but the whole intro of the moose swimming across the river and the guy, you know, just the gravity of the situation, you know, we're just killing people in the water. And then, you know, he just lightens the mood up by, do I get my combat action ribbon? And you know, it's real. I mean, and
yeah.
I think a lot of books miss the realism of war.
And I think when you look at people who are going to be an operator or they're going to war, civilians back home think of every time we're shooting the guns, we are in full combat battle rattle. We're ready to go. All of our PPE is strapped in, strapped on. And your first scene, just that is not the way it fucking goes. Because sometimes you're on the rack, you hear the guns, you grab your shit, you grab your dick, and you go fuck people up. I mean, that's kind of how your story started. And it was like, well, this is going to be a real book.
Yeah, you got to be able to kill people even when you get caught with your pants down. And that first prologue, you know, illustrates that.
Yeah, illustrated pretty clearly.
Yeah, very clearly. So let's take a step back, though, Kevin. Can you just, like, elaborate and tell us a story of how it even came to be that you joined the military?
Sure. You know, I was a underwhelming college student in 2000 and 2001 at James Madison University. I'm from Connecticut.
Okay.
You know, I grew up very, you know, very middle class Connecticut. You know, I drove a Jeep Grand Cherokee, you know, went to an all guys Catholic prep school.
That
swam.
Fits. Just looking at you, that all fits.
Yeah, I got the Marlin in the background.
Yeah.
That's how we do it.
Yeah.
But, you know, I wanted to be a doctor, and I wanted to get out of Connecticut. So I chose James Madison University, about a good 7 hours away from home. Mm-hmm. And I majored in chicks, booze, and rugby.
Yeah.
And my first semester, my GPA was a 0.7. So, like I said, very
That's
underwhelming.
Impressive.
Yeah, you know, I'm surprised, you know, today I'm even a physician assistant with those grades, but I guess I wasn't focused. And, you know, the semesters went by, my parents kept, you know, fronting the money for me to go to school, but 9/11 hit. And my friend's father was killed in the Trade Center, you know, a close friend of mine. And what stuck out the most was his father came down, made a call to his family, and they went back up to get the rest of his team. And that's when, you know, the Trade Center took his life along with, you know, 2,000 other civilians. And for a directionless kid, you know, and I was a kid at the time, I came home to a memorial service, and I thought about where I was going to go. And I didn't know what I was going to do. I was physically able, somewhat smart, and I had a lot of potential, and I was fucking pissed, as was a lot of people of our generation. Mm-hmm. So I went down to the recruiting station, oddly enough, went to the Marine Corps office, They were out to lunch. They had a little sign, nice, neat sign. You know, said they were out to lunch, be back at 13:30. So I walked into the Navy office, and they had a sign, a poster on the wall that said SEALs, guys climbing out of the water. And I said, that's it. That's what I want to do. And I saw the movie G.I. Jane. I was like, I'm going to go to Buds with Demi Moore. It's great.
Hell oh, yeah.
Perfect. So I was, actually kind of serendipitous that the Marines were out to lunch.
See, mine was a little bit different. I went to go join the Air Force, and the Air Force dude wasn't there. It was like 09, and then Marine Gunny comes out, and he's like, you don't want to be a pussy, do you? Like, I was like, well, not really. Yeah. I mean, he's like, can you do a pull-up? I was like, I could do several. He's like, well, then you need to be a Marine. So
yeah, perfect.
Mine went a little bit opposite. So you,
but let the record be clear. My intent was to be a Marine that day. They just weren't there.
Well, thank you for that. I appreciate that. So life as a SEAL. What do you remember specifically? Any story, like any time when you were going through Buds, where you're like, "Fuck, I don't know if this is for me."
No, I never had that moment, and especially in Hell Week. You know, leading up to Hell Week, my grandfather passed away. He was a gentleman. You know. Great human being, great role model. He joined the Navy after Pearl Harbor. And I was given the opportunity. I could go home to his funeral, stay in. And my commitment was to the teams, to be a team guy. So I stayed. And, you know, that just strengthened my resolve that I wasn't going to quit. And, you know, when you're a competitive human being, like we all are, when somebody quits in that training at that level, it makes you stronger. And we started with over 200. We finished Hell Week with 39. So by the end... You know, the 39 of us were a lot stronger, and that strengthened my resolve every time I saw somebody quit. And I knew that I was better than them, and I was meant to do this job.
And what you said about that strengthened your resolve, that seemed like that happened through a lot of the adversity that you saw. Because as I was reading your book, I kind of draw parallels from what General Mattis had talked about at the UN. And for those that don't know, or not, it wasn't at the UN. General Mattis gave a speech where he talked about a concept called post-traumatic growth. Around veteran issues, we talk about post-traumatic stress disorder all the time, where you come back as damaged goods and the idea that you always come back as damaged goods. Mattis was saying for a larger portion of those that come back with PTSD, they come back with post-traumatic growth. They come back from combat as stronger individuals that have a greater respect for humanity because they've seen the opposite end of it. And it feels like that's kind of what you described in your book, but just not in the same words. Do you think that's accurate?
Yeah, I think that fits pretty accurately. You know, I look at it from the perspective that, you know, I did a job that very few people do. I think it's 0.0026 of the U.S. population are SEALs, which is pretty low. But then also got to experience combat. Not every SEAL gets to combat, especially where we were at in Ramadi in 06, and got to do a job and experience a lot of awesome situations and then obviously some very terrible ones. But I don't think they were as negative as a public would like to, you know, envision it. And I feel that even having lost teammates and having to be a medic in those situations, you know, Mark Lee's last gift was that situation. You know, it's like, hey, Dauber, it's time to, you know, sack the fuck up and be a man. And that made me stronger. And I look at it as a positive. It's a very terrible situation, you know, Mark dying, but, you know, I was given an opportunity to learn a lot about myself, and I think there's a lot of growth to that, and I think Mattis is correct with his theory.
Yeah, I absolutely do, too. And I think back to guys that I knew who were killed beside me, and I think this the same. Like, you really – I valued my time with my children when I came back, and you really realize that life is fragile, and whenever you're seeing different – like, the beating of the different war drums, you're like, well, there is going to be a cost. Are you ready for that cost? And – just looking around at the entire scope instead of this one little thing, it's going to affect many, many ripples are going to hit from the stone hitting the lake, basically.
Right. And I think you come back as a much more cultured individual. And I think you appreciate the smaller things, you know, with kids, you know, watching them grow and being a part of their lives. It's, you know, you're exactly right. Life is fragile in a split second, can't be gone. And those who have experienced every part of life, you know, to include combat, tend to be, I would say, more invested in the future. And I think veterans are a great advocate for that type of lifestyle.
No, and I completely agree with that. I think it's just give. I said in very one of our very first episodes that just my perspective, just on the world in general, completely changed when I came back from Iraq. But keeping with the theme of Iraq, and you talk a little bit about gaining some culture. So you've written a book. So and also in terms of pop culture, many people know the movie American Sniper. I bet you a lot of people don't know that you were actually in that movie playing yourself, though. So could you?
That's right. You know, I have to tell them to go back and rewatch it.
Yeah, it's wild. So I mean, how does that even come about that you know you're there next to Bradley Cooper getting directed by Clint Eastwood?
Well, it's simple. I mean, the fourth phase of Buds is you know learning how to write a book and star in movies.
Apparently.
Everybody knows that.
Yeah.
No, you know, I was in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, going to grad school. My wife was in Connecticut finishing her semester teaching. And in that time, I had no idea that Cooper's production company had bought the rights to American Sniper and Jason Hall was going to write the screenplay. So my wife found the only Jason Hall who recently liked American Sniper on Facebook and sent him this message, which basically said, hey, we know a lot of people in this story. Don't fuck it up.
Yeah.
So Hall writes back. He's like, awesome. I am the guy that's writing it. And, help me, don't fuck this up. So they had a couple conversations on Facebook. My wife came down 2 months later to Winston-Salem and was like, hey, I met somebody. I'm like, really?
That's not the way you wanted to start.
Yeah, it wasn't the first thing she said, let's be clear.
Yeah.
She's an honest woman. And, you know, she's like, don't worry, he's Hollywood. And I was like, I'm really going to fuck this guy up.
Yeah.
And she said, but he's the screenwriter for American Sniper. So I was like, what? They're making it into a movie? Because Chris had interviewed me for his book. So I texted Chris and I was like, hey, is it true? They're making a movie? He's like, yeah, man. Hall's writing it. I was like, oh, that's awesome. He wants to know more about Mark Lee and Ryan Jobe. He's like, well, talk to him. He's like, tell him whatever he needs to hear. So the three of us ended up working on the original screenplay of Sniper. And I spent a lot of time while I was going through grad school working with Jason. And Jason actually delivered the screen play the day before Chris was murdered that Friday. I found out Saturday from Stephen Young, the CEO of Kraft, that Chris had been murdered. And I passed it along to Jason, who was obviously crushed. Long story short, the movie was going to be made regardless. We invited Jason to come and see the funeral and see that, I guess, brotherhood really in the flesh. And a lot of that is portrayed in the, mm-hmm. you know, the closing credits of American Sniper,
which I think is just so powerful. That they
I think
showed.
It makes the movie.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, you know, people are like, well, is Sniper real? And I was like, well, it's Bradley Cooper's interpretation of Chris Kyle through Clint Eastwood's lens. Mm-hmm. Cooper never met Chris. Clint never met Chris. So it's really, you know, second and third hand interviews that they had with people who knew Chris. But, you know, Jason Hall put me up there to be a technical advisor. And I was on the range training Bradley like 2 hours into the training. He's like, dude, you got to play yourself in the movie. I was like, what? I was like, let's get you to hit a target first.
Yeah.
Let's get you to be an American Sniper, and then we'll think about that. But he kept pestering me, and finally I auditioned on an iPhone when I got back to grad school, and Clint loved it. I got a call from the casting director. He's like, hey, I showed the tape to Clint. And I was like, yeah. He said, boy, damn good. Get him a job.
That's awesome.
And I was like, all right, I think I finally made it now.
Yeah.
3 weeks later, I was in Morocco.
That's awesome. Now, of special operators, I don't know if you're familiar or not, Rudy Reyes. You or Rudy Reyes, who you got in a power ranking as actors. You or Rudy.
Wait, a power ranking?
Yeah, power ranking. You versus Rudy.
Well, I think Rudy's done a lot more, but I, you know, I've done two movies. I did American Sniper, and then I did a stunt acting scene in Ant-Man. So I got to work with Clint Bradley, Michael Douglas. I got beat up by Evangeline Lilly, and got to work with Paul Rudd. So, you know, two and out, I'm good with that. So,
how's Bradley as a shot? Is he a decent shot?
He's pretty good. I mean, you know, he would hit head plate targets at 400 meters. My wife hits him at 500 meters.
No big deal.
Irons or
no? No big deal. What's that?
They go in irons or no? You teach them any irons? Like iron
sights? No, you know, we had such an expedited training for him. We did it on a long weekend, myself and my buddy Rick, who's a former team guy. And we got him on the range out in Santa Clarita. And he's actually pretty good, pretty proficient. What I liked was teaching room clearance was simple with Bradley because he's such a good actor that he picks up everything you tell him and he does it without, you know, needing to do it a bunch of times.
Yeah, so he's not like a young Lance Corporal.
No.
Terrible.
So, I mean, I imagine you have a close relationship with Chris's wife, Mrs. Kyle. And, you know, this is very important, you know, that even your wife said to the gentleman writing the screenplay, don't fuck this up, because it's so important to be honest and tell your guys' story in a real way and not to, to over Hollywood it. So I guess did Mrs. Kyle or your wife, did any of these people have a problem with this story being told or with the finished product?
Yeah. You know, Chris was really private. I did not have, you know, I didn't know Taya as well. You know, while we were in the teams, got to know her, you know, a little bit. But I stayed really connected with Chris's parents, Wayne and Debbie and, Jeff. You know, when the movie came about, you know, Chris was very much alive and he very much sold the rights to, the production company. So they had the creative license to do whatever they wanted. So I think in their effort to incorporate Taya, to incorporate, you know, people that knew Chris, I think is, you know, very, generous, but they didn't have to. So whatever the product was, you're never going to please everybody.
Sure.
I know the way they portrayed Jeff Kyle, a Marine. Jeff is a strong Marine, a badass. And they made him as almost the foil to Chris. And, you know, as a weak guy. And I know Jeff wasn't happy with that.
There's a lot of Marines that hated the way that the Marine Corps was portrayed in that movie. We thought it was, like, it was bullshit. Like, that we didn't know what the fuck we were doing. And just like, come on, man. Like,
And then, you know, the other, I did the technical advising for the SEAL stuff, but the other, you know, technical advisor was a former Marine, you know, he was a 30-year Marine. But you know, that's, they wanted it to be just strictly about Chris.
Right.
And, you know, in order to make a bunch of actors who had never done it before look really good, you have to make everyone else look really bad. And that, you know, and it makes people mad. Those of us who look at a movie and say, hey, that's not right. That's not how it's done. Chris is out there planning ops, running unilateral stuff. They're like, that's not right. I'm like, you got to understand, this is like an artist's rendition of how combat is in their mind. And I think, you know, I think what's the takeaway from all this is that's Hollywood, right? So if you want to get a clear, you know, unadulterated perspective of what war is like, you pick up a book like my book, you pick up a book like, you know, Marcus Luttrell, and you pick up a book like Rob O'Neill with his coming out, and you get a firsthand perspective, and that you have to hear that word over Hollywood if you want to get the correct story.
Sure. Yeah, because I mean, basically, they essentially made the Hurt Locker for a sniper, like where it's just just absolutely outside the realm of possibilities of what you're, because people are like, you guys don't like the Hurt Locker, like, no, because it's fucking fake, like it's ridiculous. The whole concept is ridiculous.
It's true, and then you know, it's like, don't educate me about war in Iraq, because you're the one that makes Americans look like monolithic, you know, Neanderthals going to there killing everybody. I mean, that's not how it really is. You read the books and you talk to us, and that's not how it is. So listen to a veteran.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
Now that you're out and stuff like that, you have a chair. You want to tell us a little bit about your charity with your wife?
Sure. You know, we were writing the book in 2015, and I'd been to Africa hunting before, and I was absolutely blown away how beautiful it was. So I wanted the next time to bring my wife out there. So Lindsay came out there with us, and it was, you know, we hunt plains antelope. We don't do any, we're not killing Cecil the lion out there.
That's good.
And that's, it's always good. And, you know, we got off the grid, turned off the cell phones, the computers, and she just got to experience deer camp. Grew up in a hunting family, but she never hunted, and loved it. You know, she loved the storytelling and, you know, really the bonding experience. And she ended up killing an impala out there. But when we came back, she said this would be a great experience to share with veterans and their spouses, because I'm a full believer that when you're in a community like, you know, the Corps or the Army or the Navy, you know, you have a very tight-knit community and your friend group is very close. Mm-hmm. And when you leave that, you know, it gets dispersed and you're kind of on your own island. And the relationship with you and your spouse has to be strong. And a lot of veterans hunt. So if we can incorporate the spouse, and the spouse can understand why vets like to go hunt, why they like to be in the woods, why they like deer camp, you can build a stronger relationship within the family, and that ensures success long term. So our goal was to do that and then also take veterans to Africa again. So we're headed to Africa this May with two veterans and two spouses. We're going to be doing a documentary on it.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah, I think that's super fascinating, because I think that's very much unlike anything I've ever really seen in terms of communities and charities that are helping veterans. So I think that's absolutely fantastic that you guys have kind of taken a different approach to it. But I think it's in its uniqueness, I think, is kind of what makes it great. So I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, I completely agree. And that building that bond and keeping that bond of talking to other veterans really helps. And you see that guys who lose their communication system are the ones who really struggle when they feel like they're out there on the mountain by themselves. So it's good to have that group still in. Well, Kevin, thank you very much for coming on, man. We really appreciate it. It was great having you. Thanks again.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. Yeah, and you can go out there, grab a copy of The Last Punisher. If you don't speak English, you can get it in Spanish. It's coming out in French and German and Czech as well.
Awesome.
So thank you guys for having me, and I appreciate it.
Yeah, no, The Last Punisher. Very good book. I chew up all these books. All these books about the last 15 years. I love them all. So definitely be sure to go to Barnes & Noble. Check out Last Punisher. It's a great read. So, Kevin, thank you very much. We appreciate it.
And if people wanted to donate to your organization, where do they go?
Sure. They can go to www.huntingforhealing.org. We have a charity event coming up March 18th down here in Orange Beach. I've got four speakers, four veterans. Chris Kyle's brother, Jeff, is going to speak. I've got a buddy of mine, Tosh, who's a SEAL, got his hand blown off. Omar Avila, Crispy, if you guys follow him on Instagram. And then Joe Deloria, who's an Air Force triple amputee EOD guy. We took him on a previous trip. So they're all going to tell about their experiences and how they've become stronger because of their experiences.
Awesome. Well, thanks again.
Yeah, man. We're really happy to hear that you're doing so well, too, and you're out there. You're helping a lot of other people, other veterans. So thank you very much for that.
Likewise, guys. Thanks for your service. Thanks for having me on. Absolutely.
Enjoy your day off.
Well, now on Zero Block 30, I'd like to welcome on my good friend, Big Cat. Hey! Big Cat, welcome to Zero Block 30, pal.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
It's good to have you, Dan.
Yeah, it feels good to be here.
So
you look like you would fit in.
Should I salute?
Yeah, please.
Okay,
do.
There you go. I did salute. I just saluted.
You did salute. I can verify that.
Hey,
you did,
I want to. Can I be the first to wish you guys a happy Memorial Day?
Yeah, you can.
Thank
okay.
you.
Nice. I was the first on record. On Which record. One is? I always get them confused. Memorial Day is
the one in May.
Memorial Day is to celebrate those who died in combat.
Got it. And then Labor Day is for the lazy workers, and then Veterans Day is anyone who served, and then the Marines' birthday, that's just in there somewhere.
Yeah, the Marines' birthday and Veterans Day are usually like 2 or 3 days apart.
Got it. Okay.
So Dan, people forget, and actually I don't even know, there might be a lot of people that don't even know, that you and I did a podcast together.
We did.
Way back when.
We did, way back when. The No Quitters podcast, The Challenge. I have not been watching The Challenge recently. That's my fault. I apologize to everyone out there who's listening to Zero Blog 30 and also listen to No Quitters. There's probably, what, like five or six of
them? Yeah, that Venn diagram overlaps for about five people.
Right, but I want to just apologize.
We miss
but you
on
know,
there,
we, we have our normal what you would do if you were in the military. So
yes.
We wanted to bring on our pal Big Cat.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think you would do?
So this is a tough question because I've been throwing around. I'm just going to kind of throw out a bunch of different things. You guys can tell me what I'm suited best for. I wouldn't hate driving a submarine.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Is that something that you think I could
handle? I feel like you're a little big for that.
Okay. Yeah, tight quarters?
But at the same time, it might be tight quarters, but you do have a lot of experience driving big things.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Fair, big rig.
It could be Motor T.
Yeah. I wouldn't mind being the guy who presses the nuke button. Is there one guy like that? It's
I'm
not
sure
the
it
president calls,
down.
Right? And then someone's like, "Okay, boom." Would that?
I think there's actually like six people that have to be there.
So one of the six.
Yeah, you could do that. Yeah.
Okay. I wouldn't hate being the guy who plays Call of Duty online and just tells everyone that they were in the military.
That's a good one.
That's a pretty good job.
That
for me.
Would be a good one. But as we mentioned right before we started recording, PFT is going to be the guy out there. Searching for people who are stealing valor, so you got to be careful that he doesn't catch you.
True. Let's see. What else would I like to do? Tanks seem kind of fun, driving a tank. Or that also, though, tight quarters be tough for me. What do you guys think I'm best suited for?
All right, so here's mine. I think that you could be, when Trent came on and did it, I told Trent that he would be a great cook, like that he would be a good
cook. That's so mean. What did he? Now, Trent
but
is
Trent
so
was all
nice.
About it.
Yeah, Trent's so nice that he's probably like, oh, man, Chaps, thanks so much. Thanks for telling me that I'm too much of a pussy to fight, so I would just cook, you know, like 70 pounds of chili every day for everyone.
So I would think that you could be Trent's boss.
Okay, well,
Because you have to admit, offended. You're the kind of guy that would love to go around while all the troops are eating and stuff. Like, hey, how you doing? How you're out there? Like, just mingling with everybody.
True.
Making sure everybody's enjoying their stuff.
Okay, I actually have another one. You know, I think Saddam Hussein had this when they had, like, the guy who would test his food to make sure there wasn't poison in it.
Yeah.
I wouldn't actually hate to be that guy. Like, to be Trump's guy to just eat all of his food before he eats it. Yeah,
you risk
the you know, being poisoned, but once you're poisoned, right?
Yeah. Like, but otherwise, I mean, if you're in the military, you have a pretty high. I mean, most people have a chance that they're going to die in their job. At least if you're going to die, you're going to die eating the best foods that there
is.
Yeah,
it's great. It's great on the way to being poisoned.
Okay. I would also, I used to watch that Navy SEAL Buds training. Remember when I can't believe they actually did that.
Yeah, like
you guys ever
Discovery
talk
Channel?
About that?
Yeah.
The fact that they actually like let the cameras in there for a long time.
Yeah, that was like a one-time deal.
Yeah.
I've never seen it done again.
Yeah.
The best one that I've seen is the Coast Guard. And the Coast Guard did like a rescue diver one.
Yeah,
where
so
they
Dan,
go up to Alaska. It's fucking dope.
That is what I think you would do.
A
I
diver?
Think you would be a Coast Guard rescue swimmer because...
I'm a good swimmer.
People, I don't know if people know this. You're great at short distance swimming.
I am.
Jump
I am.
Out of the chopper, swim short distance, save some lives, get back on the
can
chopper.
You,
I could get
now,
in on that.
Whenever you did a lot of swimming, though, you were thinner. Do you think you'd be a little too buoyant
I'm
now?
Still fast. I'm still a very fast swimmer. And with flippers, forget about it. So I guess the question is, how long do they have to swim for? Like more than like 90 seconds?
Probably.
Yeah. Unfortunately, yeah.
Okay, so that might
it's
be
like
tough.
An all-day type swimming thing.
That's... All right, that might be tough. And then the last one I was thinking about was the guy who trains everyone in hand-to-hand combat, like the MMA guy.
Okay.
He seems kind of like a badass. He's like,
I'm
going to show you how to kill everyone seven different ways.
Do you know a lot of MMA to do that? Or
I feel like I could armbar you, chaps.
Oh.
Hey, you bitch.
Damn.
Yeah.
We might have to put that to the test at some point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you did say you could knock out Floyd Mayweather, so that's fitting, too.
Exactly. Well, I just want to tell you guys I respect you guys, and I respect the troops. Marlon's Man taught me that.
Thank you.
Have you guys talked about Marlon's Man at all?
No.
No, we need to have him on the show.
He does a lot for the troops by telling everyone how much he respects them.
It meant a lot to me as a former troop whenever we went to the NLCS. For me to see you so happy at a baseball game, really did a lot for me.
For Marlon's Man to take PFT and I to a baseball game in the front row while you sat in an obstructed view on the bleachers.
A building.
But he respected the troops enough.
Well, I saw how happy you were, and like as an extension, because you're my friend, he made a troop happy.
Good point.
For you.
I am part of the troops. Yeah, I actually have asked that before at like hotels and stuff. I'm like, hey, one of my really good friends was in the military. Do I get a discount for that? And it has not worked yet.
Call me, dude. If they fucking give you that shit, just call me. Put their asses on the phone. I'll light them up real quick.
Okay.
I got no issues with that.
All right. We're going to do that.
Susan at the front desk with her bitch ass.
All right. Well, thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for joining us.
All right.
Bye, Danny.
See you, chaps.
Well, thanks again to Kevin for coming on the show. We really appreciate it. And check out his organization that he talked to you about. They're doing good shit. I would love to go to Africa and hunt.
Yeah,
I wouldn't
seriously.
Go to Africa. If I went to Africa, and if you're going to go to Africa and hunt, don't be like the Trump boys and cut off an elephant's tail. That's fucked up.
Yeah, don't be a jerk.
Yeah.
Do like, it within reason.
I have no problem with somebody coming to Texas or Georgia or Alabama or New York or wherever, like upstate New York, and shooting a deer. So I feel like going to Africa and shooting an antelope or something like that is along the same lines.
I agree.
So it's a sustainable thing. And I would love, if you have some antelope, I would love to eat some. We could do a little cooking with Chaps episode.
I wonder how antelope tastes.
There's a wild game place here that they do like sustainable wild game in San Antonio.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking about just going to buy a bunch of shit. Like they have.
Just try it out. You know, yeah. For cooking with Chaps.
Antelope. They have emu. Like imagine how badass an emu breast for Thanksgiving would be fucking dope. Like
that would put Pam.
Up my big green egg. It's just this huge fucking 80-pound emu breast. People are like, what in the fuck?
That would put Ham on notice. That'd be stunting all over Ham.
Oh, my God. The Ham lovers would never be able to recover.
But, yeah, that Kevin's interview and our discussion with him was really super interesting because, you know, he was coming on to just be an advisor.
Shout out to us for giving super interesting interviews.
But, yeah, no, I mean, he goes to just be an advisor on this film. And just the way it all came about with his wife reaching out to the necessary folks and – than him being offered by Bradley Cooper. You know, superstar, movie star Bradley Cooper says, like, hey, do you want to play yourself? And I think what people may not realize is that I'm by no means am I going to say acting is hard. What I will say is I think it's very easy to tell the difference between someone who is a talented actor and someone who is not a talented actor. Mm-hmm. And by that, I mean, I don't think you can just pluck people off the street. In essence, that's what they did here with Kevin, and put them in a movie, and it doesn't always work that well. And I thought he wasn't given any considerable monologues or anything, but I felt like he held his own in the movie to where I didn't realize he was not an actor until after, and I read about it.
Yeah, you would never know that he was an actual SEAL, like, going through the movie. Like,
so I thought he was great, but you know what? I think that speaks to what Chris Kyle's father had said to Clint Eastwood and to Bradley Cooper before the movie had started, and they started filming. In so many words, he said, if you screw this up and you paint my son in any bad light, you know, I'm going to unleash hell on you. So I think they paid very special attention, especially Bradley Cooper. You know, he was 185 and he bulked up to 225 just because he said he wanted to feel like Chris Kyle, because he said, if I don't believe I'm Chris Kyle, how can I expect anybody else to think I'm Chris Kyle? So a lot of credit to Cooper, and I feel like there are very few directors who could have pulled off that screenplay and that story, and certainly Eastwood's one of them. But I mean, I really liked the movie. Did you like it?
No.
Okay. Why not?
I think it paints Marines in terrible light. It makes you look like you're idiots. Like, I think that if there's anything that we're good at, it's close combat and mm-hmm. raids and shit like that. Like, and to paint us that we don't know, we need a SEAL to help us out, is fucking atrocious. I don't know any Marines that like the movie.
That's fair. From your perspective, that's completely fair, because they definitely painted it
I would never ask a Navy SEAL how to fucking clear a room.
Yeah.
I know how to do it. Like, yeah. They're probably better than me doing it, because they train, like, all the time just for that purpose. But I've done shit with reconnaissance Marines, Navy SEALs, and I didn't feel like I was behind the power curve ever. And I know that any Marine that was in an infantry battalion doesn't feel like they were behind the power curve on how to clear Fallujah. Like, we knew how to do that. But I like the fact of having people on, and we're going to do that again soon. I know that a lot of people have tweeted me and asked me about if I know anything about Megan Levy. We do know Megan Levy. Megan Levy and I trained together in San Diego. We were, like, I think 2 or 3 months apart in canine school. She was a little bit before me, but we were there cross-section, and then we met up in training in San Diego again. So we're pals. When she got blown up like they show in the movie, I was there when she got back to San Diego on my way to Iraq. So we were pretty, pretty close together. So she's going to be coming on in a few weeks. We also have Jason Kander, who you've seen him all over the place. He was the dude who was running for Senate and was putting an M4.
It was
M4, right?
Yeah.
Or it was an AR-15.
Maybe an AR-15, yeah. So very similar,
Yeah, very similar. I mean, basically exactly the same.
Yeah.
So he was putting it together blindfolded in a challenge to the guy that he was running against. It was pretty fucking badass. So
could you do that?
Blindfolded, probably not.
I've never tried. I don't know. I've got to imagine he's, like, practiced that, but
yeah, it wasn't something that I ever...
I never thought to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I never did that, but give me a couple weeks, I'm sure I could. It's not that difficult.
There's not that many parts, yeah.
And you can't fuck it up. It either goes in or it doesn't.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
You're not going to shove something in the wrong place. That's what she said.
hopefully, I don't know, fingers crossed, when Megan joins us, whenever that may be, man, if we could get Kate Mara, the actress who plays her in the film.
Hold your horniness down. Hold your horniness down.
Kate's a very nice actress. I think she's very talented. I'd love to speak to her as well.
She is wonderful. Maybe we could get her on too. But Megan's stoked about it. She lives in New York. She still does stuff with K-9. Recently, she worked with the Yankees, actually. And her story with what the Yankees treated her was pretty fucking awesome.
I feel like we'll have a lot to talk to her about.
I talked about her and her dog Rex, who I met. And Rex was a fucking asshole for sure. Like, that part, the movie is not going to embellish. Rex was a fucking dick. So, anyway, any save rounds, alibis?
Let me think. Oh, yeah, I tweeted out something for my organization, Operation Heal Our Heroes. Anybody in Boston, do me a favor. Saturday, May 20th, we're putting an event together, so just keep that date clear on your schedule for that evening. We're going to put something together that's hopefully going to be a lot of fun. raise a lot of money for our organization and raise veteran mental health care awareness. So hopefully we can put that together and we can see a lot of you guys out there. And I think that's about it. Yep, that's
Sounds
about it.
The retreat.